2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
There's desperation and anguish.
More than 80,000 Afghans have since arrived in America, but this story is still unfolding. I'm Andreas Martin. In my new podcast, Stranger Becomes Neighbor, we'll find out what happens to these new arrivals in our communities. Who would help our newest neighbors? Follow us at KSLPodcast.com, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.
Never seen the sky so blue. The birds are singing, I got nothing to do. Hey, hey,
hey, hey.
It's a sunny day.
Sunny day now.
My pocket's empty, my cupboard's bare. Call me illogical, I just don't care.
Hey, 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 hey.
It's just a sunny day.
Hey, hey, it's a sunny day.
It's just a sunny day.
Yeah. It's the KSL Greenhouse. Expert tips for flowers, trees, gardens, and soil. Our hosts are Maria Chaleos and Ton Bettis on KSL News Radio.
Good morning, and thank you for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse. And yes, the sun is out, thank goodness, after all of those storms this week. And we are looking at temperatures in the 50s this week. With us this morning is Liz Hamilton, and Ton is coming to us remotely this morning because Tanya, you've been a little bit under the weather this week.
Yeah, I was out Wednesday, and then I've just had a cold I haven't been able to kick. I'm mostly over it, but just out of safety, I'm buried deep in my bunker in Orem in my office. So,
well, you are very loyal. Most of us, if we were feeling a little under the weather, we'd just call in sick, Ton, but thank you for being with us this morning.
Oh, I always love doing the show.
And you invited Liz to come join us, too, just in case you can't make it all the way through.
Yes. And so Liz is not only here just as kind of the backup, but she's a very talented horticulturist that does a little bit of everything, a little bit of teaching, a lot of design work. Right now she's employed by the Utah Department of Ag and Food, and she has been a guest or co-hosted several times in the past, and we're grateful to have her back.
Liz, thank you for being here this morning.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
So, Ton, we want to start this morning, and the plant of the week is the primrose, which is one of my favorites, and you can buy them just about anywhere right now. They're in all of the box stores.
They are, and they offer a really bright pop of color in early spring. And so they're locally, you know, you'll read that they say perennial, and Liz can interject here if she's any different, but what we're calling cottage primrose, or sometimes kind of improperly English primrose, locally isn't really a long-lived plant, but what they're worth using, you know, in if you have planter baskets on your porch or flower beds around the front of your house, they'll give you color for at least 8 weeks, and they're just very beautiful.
Yeah, and I think it's important to note that it is a separate species. It's not related to evening primrose, like totally different family. And I think sometimes people get those two confused as well. But yeah, in my experience, I actually have one in my yard, just one. I didn't think it would make it through this season, and it's come back for about 5 years, which I think is unusual for our climate. I don't know why that's happening. And I would also point out that it's in complete full shade, so I don't know if that has anything to do with it. I just was trying to put some fun color up front, and then it's just hung around, and it blooms every year, and it's actually super pretty. So I think it can. They can live. I just
in the right spot.
In the right spot. Yeah, you can't expect full sun in our hot, warm summers to do it any favors, for
yeah.
sure.
The thing I love about the primroses is that you can put them in your containers on your porch, and then after about 8 weeks, when it's starting to get too warm, I've actually planted some in my back in full shade, and they've done okay for a few years. I wouldn't say, Ton, that they've actually thrived in our climate, though.
No, I think that they, you know, these are actually fairly cold hardy, and areas like Heber, Ogden Valley, even maybe Bear Lake in protected areas, that they would do better, to where the afternoon highs usually aren't above the low to mid 90s. But here on the Wasatch Front, they can overwinter, but they're primarily grown as a springtime annual.
Yeah, the pansies and the primroses I plant as my springtime and winter annuals, right? So what kind of conditions do they need as far as soil and water, Ton?
The soil, they're not very picky, especially if you're only using them for, you know, 8 to 10 weeks. You know, they do not like to be dried out, but they don't like a swamp either. So they just need evenly moist soil, maybe with some compost mixed into the soil if you can before you plant them. But they're not overly picky.
I think they're native to the UK too. So like the original species type that have been, hence the name English primrose, right? But they like that really overcast, very humid, like wet, very rich soil. So it's not super conducive to Utah, but they, and like, I think that's why they're ending up thriving in that shady spot near my front porch too. And also, I would say something to think about is slugs. Slugs love them. So if you have a slug problem, they will eat them. Hopefully, they're protected if you have them in a container. But if they are in ground, you've got to protect them.
Yeah. Anything you want to add, Todd?
Well, just if you need a pop of color, be adventurous. You know, these are some that I think a lot of people haven't used, and they could use more. I remember growing up, I worked for a lady in my neighborhood who was older, and she always filled up a couple of small flower beds near her entryways with these, and she mixed them with ranunculus, and they were always really pretty. And there's just one I would give a shot, even if it's just a few here or there, and just like I said, be adventurous and try them out.
Yeah, they're super fun in the house, too. I like putting them in little pots and putting them in the middle of the table for a centerpiece. Just that dash of spring color just makes us all feel better, even when there's a lot of snow still outside.
Really lovely for Easter centerpieces, right? Too. You can get them in all those really like soft pastel colors and put them in with some cute bunny statues and some sheet moss, and you have yourself a really gorgeous centerpiece.
Yeah, I've put them in baskets too, which makes them cute for Easter. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back with your phone calls. The number to call with your questions, 801-575-8255. You can text us at 57500.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas,
in the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.
Good morning. Thank you for spending your Saturday morning with the KSL Greenhouse. Maria, Ton, and Liz with you this morning. Taking your calls and questions, 801-575-8255. And you can also text us at 57500. Ton, people are up. The sun is out, and they have a lot of questions this morning. Let's go to our phone lines. Jan is in West Valley. Good morning, Jan. What is your question?
Yes, my mother-in-law had necrotic ring spot in her lawn, and she has let the lawn die. So what should she do now?
Well, when you say she let the lawn die, did she stop watering it, or what's the situation there?
Well, it just kind of died on its own, but she isn't well, is she watering it? Yeah, she is watering it, but it's dead. There's no green left in the lawn.
Okay, and then did it died out last summer then before it went, we should have gone dormant. Okay, and was it only in the area where they saw necrotic ring spot, or is the entire lawn gone?
The whole lawn is gone. It spread throughout the whole, and it's just in her front lawn. She lives up in Bountiful.
Well, I'm wondering what's going on, because necrotic ring spot doesn't usually knock out an entire lawn like that. You'll see rings, and then they'll coalesce into dead areas. And so I'm wondering if you had maybe some insect damage in there in addition. And so what I would recommend doing before you spend a lot of money on any fungicides or any insecticides is wait for spring, so late April to mid-May, and then collect some samples in there and see if any of the grass comes back. But I would send some samples up to the USU Pest Lab to let them go through it to see if they can find anything before I just kind of recommend a shotgun approach.
Okay, but what would be a good option if she decides she doesn't want turf grass in the front to help with, you know, water usage and the drought and everything?
Liz, do you want to chime in on the lawn alternatives?
Yeah, there's a lot out there. I'd recommend checking out Localscapes, which is a program through the Jordan Valley Water Conservation District, and they go over a lot of really great water saving methods and different plants you can try. But you can check out if you're looking to, are you looking to get rid of your lawn completely or just replace it with a drought friendly alternative?
A drought friendly alternative.
So at the same place, Jordan Valley Water Conservation District, they have a garden called the Conservation Garden Park, and they actually have a whole display where you can go and look at different options in fake little lawn sections, and you can go see if you like any of those. But there are some really great warm season grasses out there, like your buffalo grasses and things like that, that they kind of go dormant in the winter, so your lawn looks a little brown, but in the summertime, they're pretty lush and green. A lot of people talk about overseeding with micro clover, and I think it takes quite a bit of water to get up and running, but then once it's there, it takes less water, and they stay fairly green most of the summer, but again, they're not around much in the wintertime. So there are just some different options that you can check out that may work with your aesthetic, and I'd highly recommend going to check out the Conservation Garden Park and looking at what they have to offer so that you can try it before you buy it.
Okay. Any other suggestions on what we should do?
Well, like I said, if you're worried that necrotic ring spot knocked out the entire thing, I would send those samples up to the pest lab. And if you go to the website, It's pest.usu.edu. I'll look it up really quick, but if you Google USU Pest Lab sample submission, it will give you the instructions, and it's usually anywhere from $10 to $20 plus postage to have them look at it. But don't send a sample up now because it's winter and it's dormant.
Okay.
All right, Jen.
Thank you.
Thanks for your call this morning. Next listener, Ton, says, what things should they be pruning over the next month?
Well, there are several things. The stone fruits need to be pruned within the next week or so. Those would include peaches and plums and cherries and apricots and nectarines. If you haven't pruned your apples and pears, I would get those done very quickly. Roses are coming up in mid-March. And then also a lot of our shrubs should be pruned through March, the exception being if they're spring blooming, so snowball bush, lilacs, viburnums, there are a lot of them that are spring bloomers. Some of like bridal spirea, you prune those right when they're done blooming.
All right, let's go back to our phone lines. George is on the line in Provo. Good morning, George. What is your question?
Good morning. Your last caller, I think this is a very related question. I have these terrible, and you've probably answered this a thousand times, I have these terrible brown spots in my lawn. I've tried ring to green and stuff. I haven't seen it, but it's just taken big brown spots all throughout my grass. And so I want to reseed and wondered if I reseed with grass in those spots, grass seed, can I use fertilizer on my grass, or do I need to stop using fertilizer once I reseed?
Well, your you've got a couple of different things going. If you're going to recede, did you have someone test your lawn for necrotic ring spot to make sure that that's what was killing it?
No, I didn't, and I heard your last caller, so I need to send a sample into USU.
Yeah, when the lawn's actively growing, it's fine to use fertilizer when you do reseed, and you just use an average lawn fertilizer as long as it's not weed and feed. And then you, if it is a necrotic ring spot, I might actually reseed with turf-type tall fescue because the fescues are resistant or immune to necrotic ring spot.
Will that be dissonant to the other grass that's already around it?
No, the modern varieties look very similar in look and texture to Kentucky bluegrass.
Mm-hmm. Fescue, it's called.
Yeah, turf-type tall fescue. So okay, there are many kinds of fescues. You don't want pasture fescue. You don't want red fescue. You want the turf-type tall fescue.
Turf-type tall fescue. And what's the best time to start reseeding that?
It depends on the weather. You know, mid to late April is usually a good time. And then also in August, late August and mid to late August.
And how much water should be used on these places on the lawn?
Well, it depends on what you're doing. If you have existing grass there, you're going to, if you're still on restrictions, some areas still may be, you're going to have to follow those unless you can get an exception. But where you put that new grass seed down, water is normal a couple times a week, but maybe another two or three times you're going to run the sprinklers for 5 to 7 minutes to keep it moist enough for that grass seed to germinate. And when you start to see it fill in, then you could start to back off. But if it's completely bare, you've got to treat it just like you're seeding a new lawn.
When should I send a sample into the testing soil?
When the grass is actively growing and you've mowed once or twice.
Okay. Well, that's very helpful. Thank you so much. I really appreciate your help.
George, not a problem.
Thanks for your call this morning. We're going to take a break for the bottom of the hour news. Number for you to call with your questions, and the phone lines are open, 801-575-8255. You can also text us your questions, 57500.
I'm Dave Cauley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.